It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field, into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown! He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary!
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it, and they do! Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, and he's back to throw. Finds the pocket, deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes! Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure, Brady's chased, Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, a jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, John Schmell.
Big Blue Kickoff Live on this Friday morning, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. That's your telephone number to give us a call, talk Giants football, talk some draft, talk some schedule, whatever you want to talk about relating to the New York Giants and the NFL. Give us a call at 201-939-4513. You can also reach us on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. Hope everyone's having a great week. Friday is here, always the best day of the week, of course. Weekend right around the corner. Should be a nice one, at least for half a Saturday. Then rain comes and looks like it's going to be a bit of a washout. But really what Giant fans looking forward to is next week. The draft is now less than 1 week away as every NFL team gets ready to figure out who the next piece of their foundation is going to be getting ready for the 2012 season. So a lot of stuff going on in the NFL. Again, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Yesterday, Giants general manager Jerry Reese had his press conference talking a little bit about exactly what the Giants are going to do in terms of their draft pick at 32. He, of course, managed not to really mention anybody's names. Except for Andrew Luck, who obviously the Giants, apparently, Jerry Reese breaking news, would be very interested in selecting if he was available at number 32. So, as usual, Jerry keeps all his information close to the vest. He doesn't really give up any information, and rightfully so. Doesn't want to tip the Giants' hand in terms of what they're looking to do in the draft. And that, of course, is what happens every year with the Giants as they get ready to make their pick. And really, that's what's going on right now. All the scouts are in the building. Every day, Jerry Reese, Mark Ross, and the Giants team of scouts are really talking about who the Giants are going to pick with their selection, where they're going to go, what their thoughts are as they get closer to the draft. And the Giants' strategy really is always the same thing. It's one where they try to figure out what the best potential player is at that spot, and that's who they're going to take. So if at number 24, the Giants will create a list of 24 players where they decide that, look, these are 24, if they pick a 32, these are 32 guys that we think are worth our first-round pick. And if you have 32 guys ready, you know you're going to get one of those 32. And that's pretty much how it'll go here as the Giants get ready. They have their what they call rows in their draft board, as Jerry Reese described yesterday, in terms of, imagine with your fantasy draft, you create tiers where you consider a bunch of players to be of an equal value. That's how the Giants, as far as I understand it, based on what Jerry Reese said at his press conference yesterday, do their rows. They decide, look, these guys are all of comparable skill. We think these are the best players in the draft. Again, there could be 10 of them, there could be 15 of them, there could be 7 of them, there could be 3 of them, there could be 2 of them. It's all a matter of how high these guys' grades are based on what they can do on the football field. Then you have your second row, your third row, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now the Giants, what they'll do, they'll literally cross players out as they go off the board, and as they move along in the draft, this is what they'll do. And they'll try to figure out who the best potential player is available on the board when they select at number 32. Now, obviously, if you get to 32 and you figure out who's available based on the grades, who's in your row that's still there, the Giants will take a look at it, and then maybe they'll start looking at need. So if they have a quarterback with, say, like an 89 draft grade out of 100, and they have a tight end with an 88, their grades are just about equal. So, in my opinion, that's when need comes into play, and they'll be more likely to take the tight end than the quarterback there because the Giants obviously have Eli Manning sitting there, and he's the guy that will carry the Giants for the next 8 years. That's when need will come into play for the Giants in their draft room when they get to that 32nd pick. So that's what the Giants are doing now. They're creating their rows. They're creating their tiers in terms of what guys are rated at what position. And the draft is going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to have somebody to talk about the draft on Big Blue Kickoff Live every morning. Today, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Michael Eisen will be our guest next week as well to break down what the Giants are going to do with the draft. So it'll be a lot of heavy draft stuff, folks. It's coming. It's one of the fun, more fun times of the offseason in the NFL. And we look forward to it. It should be a lot of fun at Radio City Music Hall like it is every single year. Now we're joined by a good friend of mine, Daniel Mulligan. He is one of the guys that contributes to NFL Draft Bible. You can go to NFLDraftBible.com for that. Danny, good morning. How's it going, man?
Hey, good time. How's it going with you?
Everything's going all right, Danny. Your phone line is a little sketchy here. We're going to stick with it, see how it sounds, and if we have to redial, we'll redial. But I want to start first with this. As you analyze the depth of this draft by position, where do you think there will be the best value in terms of position when the Giants come up and pick with the 32nd pick in the draft?
Well, that's an interesting question, John. I mean, I was looking at a lot of the Giants' team needs, and to be honest with you, it doesn't seem like there's going to be a ton of depth at the positions you'll be looking at, whether it's, you know, offensive tackle, tight end, running back. There aren't a ton of guys. I guess running back could be a position of depth. There's always a ton of guys. I'm not sure, though, how high the Giants will look to nab a running back. As you know, they're not typically known for using a first or second round pick to grab a back that early, particularly since they've had so much success grabbing guys in day three. I mean, I guess you can make a case when you just want to look at that 32nd pick. Tight end, most likely all the tight ends will be on the board. Overall, it's not a tremendously deep position, but, you know, they'll probably have their choice of the pick of the litter at that point at 32.
All right, let's talk about the tight ends, and you mentioned them first. Obviously, Colby Fleener pretty much seems to be the consensus best tight end. You have Orson Charles right behind him. Now, Charles is more of the receiving tight end. Fleener seems to be more of the two-way guy. But why was Fleener's production at Stanford so low? He did not have a lot of catches. He clearly played with a very good quarterback in Andrew Luck. Why didn't he have the production that he maybe could have had based on his talent at Stanford?
Well, I think a couple of reasons. One, he missed some time because of injury last year. And two, you know, Andrew Luck really liked to spread the ball around. So, and he was one of three tight ends that Stanford incorporated. You know, I think the three of them combined for over 20 touchdown receptions on
Wow.
the season. And you know, they also threw their fullback, McEwing, who was a converted tight end. I mean, that's how much depth they had that position. They had a kid that was a good, you know, a tight end that they needed to get on the field. He was the fourth-string tight end, so they started him at fullback, and I think he caught about four or five touchdown passes on the season as well. So, I mean, I think the biggest reason is just Luck liked to spread the ball around to, you know, different guys. And then also, you know, the image of Stanford's offense, they're a power running team. So they ran the ball. You know, they didn't throw the ball as much as a lot of these other spread offenses. They're more of a traditional offense, a lot of two tight ends, a lot of power running game between the tackles. So they kind of threw more when they needed to throw. They, you know, kind of like a traditional Giants offense, almost, you know, going back to the 80s with Sims and those kind of guys. So they didn't throw the ball nearly as much as the Robert, you know, Griffin III at Baylor did, or, you know, the Oklahoma State or those types of schools. I mean, even if you look at Luck's overall yardage numbers, you know, he's not up there among the leaders with other guys around the country.
Now, Fleener only checks in at 247 pounds, but he is 6'6". So that tells me he probably has a lot of room to grow. And if he puts on, let's say, his first couple years in the NFL, another 20 pounds of muscle or so, he should be able to be a pretty effective blocker on that line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely needs to improve on that. And going into the, you know, as a rookie, I think catching the football is still the strength of his game. But you're right, he's got the frame. You know, he definitely needs to bulk up and get stronger. You know, I guess that's what they wanted him to be at Stanford. But I think he's got more potential as a two-way guy than most of the other players. I mean, the guys after that, if you talk about a second-round pick, whether it be a Dwayne Allen or an Orson Charles, those guys are definitely not as big. You know, Charles is only about 6'2", maybe 6'3", if you're pushing it. And then if you look even a little deeper into the draft, after that, it really kind of drops off after the top three. And if you talk about a Michael Agnew out of Missouri or Ladarius Green out of Louisiana Lafayette as a potential third-round guy, now we're talking guys who are almost purely receivers. I mean, Green is not even 240 pounds in terms of tipping the scales. And, you know, Missouri, hey, they've been very, I was almost going to say hit or miss, but they've been basically miss and miss with their tight ends. They have these pass-catching guys, but they always line up outside. They never line up with their hands on the ground, and they seem to struggle in the NFL. So I think if you're looking for a guy that can do both things, Fleener's, you know, your best shot in this draft, grabbing him at 32.
Yeah, and the Giants already kind of took a chance on a guy like that when they drafted Travis Beckham out of Wisconsin, more of the H-back tight end that splits out wide. So they probably don't want to go down that path again. All right, how about running back? You mentioned that as well, and we all know the Giants have to try to find a replacement for Brandon Jacobs. Obviously, Trent Richardson is the one guy that's going to be off the board in the top 10. Now, I'm a big fan of Doug Martin out of Boise State. To me, he's that power running back that the Giants like. He reminds me a lot of Michael Turner. And I think he would be a good fit here. Where do you see the next set of running backs, the Lamar Millers, the Doug Martins, the David Wilsons? How do you match these guys up? Which guys do you like the best?
I kind of like Lamar Miller best as my number two guy. I think he's got the most potential to be a kind of feature back out of the next group of guys. He's really explosive. He's got that breakaway speed. And I think he's a little bit better in terms of being a tough physical runner than people give him credit for. He's not quite as big as Martin or Richardson are. I think he's around 212, 215 pounds. But still, that's big enough to be a starting running back in the NFL. He did look a little softer towards the end of the year, but I think a lot of that was with his shoulder injury. When he was healthy, he was a hard runner in between the tackles. Now, you bring up Martin. Even though I like Miller as my number two guy, if I'm picking a guy for the Giants, I think Martin might be a better fit for the Giants because he does give you that you know, better size at 223 pounds. He fits the Giants' mold. He's not as flashy as Miller. He's not as explosive. You know, his 40-yard dash wasn't going to wow anybody. He's a very patient, instinctive runner. He's definitely physical, a lot of yards after contact. And I think he might be a better complement when you talk about teaming him up with Bradshaw in terms of, you know, having that two-headed backfield.
And then you take a look at a couple of the smaller guys who are really, I'll call them scat backs, the LaMichael James, the David Wilsons. Are these going to be pretty much third down backs in the NFL, or are they going to be able to carry the ball 15 times a game?
I think out of those guys, I think Wilson, I think you can even throw Isaiah Pete out of Cincinnati in there. Mm-hmm. I think out of those group of guys, I think Wilson has the best chance to be a kind of every down back, not just a third down guy or a change of pace guy. The thing with him is he's still raw as a runner. Last year was his first year as a starter. You know, he was behind the Kid Evans and then behind Ryan Williams, who was a high second-round pick last year with the Arizona Cardinals. So it was his first chance to really get some playing time at Virginia Tech. And he's still kind of trying to figure things out in the sense that, you know, too often he tries to bounce it outside. Too often he's trying to make guys miss without realizing, hey, yeah, I made that guy miss, but I ran backwards about 4 yards, and then I just ran into three other guys. Sometimes you got to take what's there, even if it's only a 1 or 2 yard run. You know, he's not Barry Sanders where he's going to, you know, take that chance and all of a sudden go 80 yards on the play. And he's probably the only guy that did that in the NFL. And let me throw a couple other intriguing guys, I think, for the Giants in terms of replacing more of a Jacobs in-between-the-tackle type of guy. I think guys that they might be able to get definitely late second, maybe even the third, guys like Chris Polk out of Washington, Bernard Pierce out of Temple, as well as Robert Turbin, a kid that, you know, maybe not that many people are familiar with out of Utah State, 222-pounder, had a torn ACL 2 years ago but came back really strong last year for Utah State. So I think, as well as Pierce and Polk are guys with size, between the tackle guys, not really home run hitters, but maybe more if you're looking for somebody specifically like a Jacobs between the tackles guy to complement Bradshaw.
All right, let's look at the offensive line now. Which tackles, and I will start there first, do you think are going to be off the board when the Giants pick at number 32?
Well, clearly the top, you know, three guys will be gone, and we're talking about Ryan Khalil out of USC, who's probably going to be a top three pick. You got Reef out of Iowa, who's going to be somewhere probably in the 10 to 15 range, and I think Cordy Glenn will be off the board as well, the right tackle out of Georgia. Jonathan Martin's the guy that a lot of people have going off the board, but he seems to be somebody that, you know, every week when you check, he's slipping a little further and further down people's projections. So, you know, once a guy's projected going around 25, to say he'll be there at 32, I don't think is a stretch. So he might be the highest rated guy that could be available. I think guys that are a possibility at 32, there's probably three guys that fall into that mix. Jonathan Martin, the left tackle out of Stanford, Mike Adams out of Ohio State, and Bobby Massey, who is a high riser out of Ole Miss, who's a big kid at 6 feet, 6 inches. I think Adams is an intriguing guy, 323 pounds. We're still not sure if he is a left tackle or a right tackle. He came in extremely, extremely highly touted. Some people had him as the best player in his class coming out of high school, going to Ohio State, really an underachiever early on, had some injury issues, but has begun to play his best football heading into his junior and senior season. So he's somebody that a year or two down the road might be finally fulfilling that, you know, vast potential that people saw 5 or 6 years ago and could be great value at number 32.
Now, you mentioned Cordy Glenn. A lot of people say he might move to guard in the NFL. Do you project him as a tackle, or do you think he's going to move inside?
I think right now people are going to give him a shot at tackle. I think he was too athletic at the combine to automatically shift him inside to guard. When this draft process started, even though he played mostly tackle, now he did play guard at Georgia as well. He played, you know, right tackle, left tackle, left guard. So he's a versatile kid at the collegiate level. When this whole process started, people assumed he was going to be a guard and have to shift inside. But he performed so well at Indy and moved so well, people were saying, hey, wait a second, you know, we got to at least give him a shot at right tackle. So I think he's going to start there. But, you know, a team like the Giants, if he happens to fall, you know, they move guys around a lot anyway, right? I mean, you know, Deal, is he a guard? Is he a tackle? So a guy like him would be interesting because even if he doesn't pan out at tackle, you can always shift him in at guard, and most likely he'll be successful there.
Okay, let's look at some of the guards and centers. Obviously, it's a very shallow draft in terms of center. Peter Kahn's really the only guy at center that is probably going to take in the first couple of days. Where do you think he fits in terms of when he's going to go in this draft?
I like Kahn's a lot. I've always been a big fan of him at Wisconsin and what he does there. You know, I don't see a lot of people having him as a first-round guy, but I think once you get into the late 20s, I don't have a problem taking a kid like Kahn's out of Wisconsin who's, you know, who's been a starter there. He's had some experiences at guard as well. You know, they had a Moffitt who was ahead of him in terms of class. But, you know, he's a really smart, instinctive kid. He's very tough, and he's an outstanding run blocker. You'd like to see a little bit more in terms of his pass protection, but, you know, obviously the closer you get to the middle, you're focused more on the run blocking.
I know a lot of people debate every year, Danny, and we're talking to Daniel Mulligan from NFLDraftBible.com. Does a great job. When is it the right time for the first guard, or center for that matter, to come off the board? When is the value worth the pick? Is it 15? Is that too early? We've seen the Pouncey kids come off the board around the 18 range the last couple of years. When do you think we're going to see the first guard, who's probably going to be David DeCastro, go off the board this year?
I guess top 10 is kind of too early. I would have him, DeCastro, probably among my top 10 players towards the latter end of that top 10. I think conventional wisdom would say that's a little too early, but I think that that's starting to shift a little bit, that type of philosophy. As you said, you know, I think one Pouncey helped the other Pouncey move up a little bit. You know, here in New York with the Jets, I think, you know, over the last 10, 15 years with Mangold and Mawai before that, I think you see how valuable having an elite center can be. I think with the contracts that a lot of these guards, you know, going back with Hutchinson that he got when he was a free agent going to the Vikings, I think, you know, the money they throw around that these guards are making now shows that, hey, maybe the NFL teams are giving a little more respect to that position. So I think if you think the guy is going to be a big-time player, I don't have a problem drafting him at 10, even though he's a guard. I know that sounds kind of crazy and you don't see it often, but I think DeCastro might be special enough to warrant a top 15 pick.
No, honestly, I'm with you. If you know this guy's going to be, or if you're 90% sure this guy's going to be a Pro Bowl guard, why take him, enjoy it, and don't roll the dice on the coin flip on the defensive end that maybe didn't try hard in his senior year. And that's one of the guys. And that's one of the guys I'm going to ask you about right now. Quentin Coplis, who is really considered probably the best athlete at defensive end, but a lot of people think he underachieved a lot in his senior year. Of course, this is not what the people upstairs are telling me. This is what I'm reading in terms of mock draft media and all that stuff. Where do you see the pass rusher, 3-4 outside linebacker, defensive end thing playing out? Who do you think is going to go where, and when are we going to get that run on pass rushers that we usually get in that early to middle of the first round?
Yeah, I think that's where it's going to be. It's probably going to be starting in the back half of the top 10. I think Ingram, the kid out of South Carolina, has passed Coples in terms of the pass rushing guys. You know, he is a one-year guy, but extremely athletic. You know, a kid that can really move around. So that's why a lot of people think he can play that outside linebacker position as well, coming out of South Carolina. Obviously, the one question is, he's a one-year wonder guy. Where was the production before that? You know, we've seen guys do this before and not, carry that over into the NFL. The other concern is he's not that short. His arms aren't that long. So, will he struggle going against NFL offensive linemen when they get into his body? Coples is the most talented guy. There's no question about that. I mean, he's got the frame, 6 feet, 5 inches, almost 290 pounds as a defensive end. And he's pretty athletic as well. You know, he's not in the, he's not the freaky athletic guy like Julius Peppers might have been coming out of UNC, but he's not that far behind, and he's a lot heavier, so he can really play the run as well. But the thing with him is, wow, where was the production? Why didn't we see that on the field? I mean, the way he moved at the combine, he should have been dominating the ACC, and that simply wasn't the case. He just wasn't that dominant player. And, then you got a guy like Courtney Upshaw, who maybe doesn't have the upside, doesn't have that tremendous athleticism, but was extremely productive at Alabama, has that experience playing 3-4 outside linebacker, although some people think he might be a better fit as a hand-in-the-ground defensive end because he's not quite that athletic. And what you liked a lot about Upshaw is he improved every year. He got better. I like to see that from football players, get better each and every season, shows you're coachable. More than any other sport, you have to be coachable once you reach the NFL. It's not like, hey, we can isolate you in the NBA, and if you're athletic enough and you're better than the other guy, you can just beat him. You have to learn the techniques. It's a team sport, so I think the coachability and the fact he's improved a lot, it impresses me. And then you have a bunch of guys who are going to be mid to late first-round guys, like a Chandler Jones out of Syracuse, who's a high-riser, and Andre Branch out of Clemson, Nick Perry out of USC. A lot of teams are still trying to figure out, are they pure defensive ends? Can they be 3-4 outside linebackers? Perry is a kid that's shown a lot of pass rush ability, but is kind of limited in terms of his run ability. Chandler Jones is another guy, talented kid, has gotten better every year, which you like, but also Big East, not a lot of great competition. I would have liked to have seen a little more production out of him during his college career.
Well, and I'll move to defensive tackle now off of that. Another guy that people think should have dominated in their conference, and I'm talking about Dontari Poe at Memphis. He's 345, he's 6'3". We all know Conference USA isn't the best college football conference around. And while all the measurables are there, the production simply wasn't.
No, definitely not. I mean, I hate to say this to the kid, but it almost reminds you of back in the day when the Jets drafted Dwayne Robertson, right, where everybody is just amazed and wowed and impressed with what he did at the combine, and he should be this, and he's going to do this, and he's going to do that. Well, it makes you wonder, well, why didn't he do it at the college level? Especially, like you said, playing in Conference USA, you would think a kid that's projected to be a top 20, some people say top 10 pick in the NFL draft, playing in Conference USA would just manhandle people, and he simply didn't do that. Now, having said that, there's not a lot of guys that are 345 pounds and can move like he can move. So you can understand why scouts have fell in love with him. And, if you can get that to click at the NFL level, boy, you have a guy that you can build a front seven around.
And I know one defensive tackle that has been vaulting up draft boards, at least if the media reports are to be believed, is Fletcher Cox out of Mississippi State. And from what I could tell about him and just reading about him, He seems to be one of those guys that just knows how to play the position, and he does everything you want a defensive tackle to do extremely well.
Yeah, basically, he can do it all. He can play the run, and most importantly, he's an explosive pass rusher that, you know, he's got the quickness. He can beat you with his feet. He's got excellent hands. He knows how to use that, and he can bull rush if he has to, and the kid plays hard, which is a question. That effort, that motor is always a question with a lot of these big guys. He seems to have one of the better motors among the interior guys, and also, you know, he's a guy that you can project to maybe even being a 3-4 defensive end with his 6-4, you know, inch length, and he's got long arms, so he could fit probably either defensive schemes. I think what separates him from the pack is his ability, his potential as a pass rusher.
All right, I'm going to go to linebackers real quick. We'll have a couple more minutes here with Daniel Mulligan. Danny, in terms of middle linebacker, the Giants still have a need there. There's talk now. Jerry Reese mentioned possibly, potentially moving Michael Boley there. They drafted a couple young middle linebackers last year. Obviously, Luke Kuechly will be off the board by the time the Giants pick at 32. Where do you think Dante Hightower is going to go in that first round?
I think Hightower could go anywhere from the mid to late first round. I think it's possible he'll be there at 32. To be honest, I'm not sure he's a great fit. I view him as a much better fit in a 3-4 scheme.
Okay.
You know, he doesn't have that great straight line speed to go sideline to sideline. He's 265 pounds. So I think he's more of that 3-4 inside linebacker that's a thumper that can attack, you know, offensive linemen, you know, disengage from blocks and make plays like that. If you're looking for that traditional Mike that can cover sideline to sideline, I'm not sure if he's the best fit for the G-men there.
Well, where do you think the Giants could find him maybe later on in the draft in this middle linebacker class, somebody that could fill that role?
It's not really that deep of a position, John, to be honest with you. I think one guy that's intriguing is Michael Kendricks out of Cal, a kid that also happened to play a lot of 3-4 at college. That's Cal's primary defense. But he's definitely more athletic than Hightower, and the kid can run. I think he ran somewhere in the 4-5 range. So he definitely has the fleetness of foot to kind of man that Mike position. I'm not sure if you would use a first-round pick on him. I think he's more of a second-round guy. But I think if the Giants were able to nab him in the second round, he wouldn't be a bad pick. Going a little deeper into the draft, third and fourth round, you're looking at maybe like a Bobby Wagner out of Utah State, maybe a James Michael Johnson out of Nevada. A real X-factor kid could be, you know, a Vontaze Burfict in the fifth or sixth round, a kid that a lot of people thought was going to be a mid-first rounder about 2 months ago.
All right, Danny, I'm going to put you on the spot before we say goodbye here. Who did the Giants select the 32nd overall pick in the 2012 NFL draft?
Well, I'm going to go safe here. I'm going to play it safe, and I'm going to go Kobe Fleener, the tight end out of Stanford. I think it seems to make sense. It's definitely, even though they signed Martellus Bennett to a one-year deal, I think that's a short-term fix. I think they need to find a long-term answer at the tight end position, give Eli another weapon in the passing game. I think he's a guy that most likely will be available, and I think the Giants also understand that, you know, when you figure out the depth and look at the different positions, that might be the most difficult position to address later on in the draft if you're looking for a starting player. So I think Fleener out of Stanford is going to be the guy at 32.
Danny, great stuff. We'll definitely have you on after the draft, break down what the Giants and other teams around the NFL ended up doing next Thursday night. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot for the time, man. Great work.
Well, thanks for having me, John. I just want to throw out there, in addition to NFL Draft Bible, if people want to check out All Media NY. I've been throwing up my draft columns the last 2 days, breaking down the quarterback and running back positions, and we'll have a lot more stuff in terms of general draft stuff as well as giant draft information in the upcoming days.
There you go, allmediany.com.
Yep.
All right, Danny, appreciate it, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Chuck.
That's Daniel Mulligan from allmediany.com and NFLDraftBible.com. They do a great job breaking down the NFL draft. Really great stuff out of him, and a lot of the stuff he talked about is – a lot of the stuff you'll hear in our draft top fives on Giants.com. Our man Dave Melroy here has been going through all the tape. We put together some little highlight packages for the top five players according to draft experts, you know, ESPN, NFL.com, Draft Bible. We've kind of scoured everybody and tried to do it like a consensus top five at each position. You can check that out. You have some pretty good highlights to see what these guys can do and maybe get a sneak peek look at future New York Giants. I guarantee you, one of these guys in these top fives, or at least one, the Giants are going to take. Oh, we're really bad at our jobs, really. But believe me, one of those guys will be the Giants picking out of the first or second round, and probably both for that matter. So make sure you check it out. All right, 201-939-4513. Before we say goodbye, let's go to our good friend Len down in Maryland. Len, what's up, pal?
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good morning.
Great show. Good having these experts on there, seriously. You know, us amateurs out here listening, and have, you know, we see some names, we make some guesses and so forth. Here's a couple of things for you. It seems to me that these experts are talking more in terms of number of the pick, even as you get into some of the later rounds, than the round that the pick comes in. And I think maybe that's the way Jerry Reese is thinking also. If he's really going best player available, he's got them lined up 1 through, let's say, 150, and he's thinking who's going to be there with the 96th, you know, who's going to be available at 96,
sure,
who's going to be available at 64, rather than thinking who's going to be available in the second round, who's going to be available in the third round. Maybe our thinking ought to be, you know, number of the pick rather than the round of the pick.
Well, and I think that's how the Giants have their draft board set up. Like I said, they have these tiers set up, and they have the guys basically in order. So for that 32nd pick, they're going to have their top 32 players, and no, we're going to get somebody in that top 32.
Yeah, yeah. They're not really thinking about round. They're thinking about top 64, top 96, et cetera, when they make the pick, rather than this, you know, third round, second round, et cetera.
100% right.
One other point. This is kind of unconventional thinking, John.
No, we like that. What do you got?
When we get to the 32nd pick, we've got the first pick in the draft. We actually have, forgetting the comp picks, we've actually got more picks than the Colts have, or more picks than the other 31 teams do. So, you know, when we get to 32, we need to be thinking we got the first pick. We got the first pick in each round the rest of the way. We got the first pick in the draft. That's the way I like to think about it. That's what's so important about the first round, John. God, you can't blow the first round. If you're picking at 15, 18, 22, you can't blow it because the Giants are sitting there at 32, and eventually they've got the first pick going forward, and they got more picks than anybody else.
Hey, you're right, and it's valuable too, Len, because you get to the end of that first day, if there are teams sitting there, you know, taking a look at their boards, and if they have somebody that maybe was in their top 10 even, or top 15, that might be there at 32, they know how many phone calls teams will be placing to the Colts with that first pick in the second round, and trying to move up if they have a player they really like. So they could be calling the Giants as well to try to move ahead of the Colts on day two to try to get that one player.
Absolutely. The Giants got the first at 32. The Giants, when they pick at 32, they got the first pick left.
Yeah.
In the draft. I mean, and the rest of the rounds is theirs. Now, I'm going to disagree with the expert on this one, and I'll tell you why real quickly. No way Fleener gets the 32.
I think he does.
The 49ers are not going to – Harbaugh is not going to allow Fleener to come to New York. First of all, he knows how good he is.
They have Vernon Davis, though. They have Vernon Davis.
I think he admires that New England model with the two tight ends, and both of these guys can run. He wants athletes for Smith to throw the ball to. And I don't want to go conspiracy theory, John, but let me just lay this out there.
All right, what do you got for me?
I think the Manningham pickup and the Jacobs pickup and the Fleener pick, believe me, no way Fleener gets past the 49ers. I think there's a little thinking, weaken the Giants as much as you can and give Smith as many weapons as you can on offense.
Well, Len, I don't think there's any doubt. And, Len, thanks for the call. Great stuff, as always, as a, you know, one of our best callers. I don't think there's any doubt the Niners are going to try to improve their offense. Look, their defense was one of the best in the NFL. I think they're returning 11 of the 12 starters, if I'm not mistaken. It might even be 12 out of 12, to be honest with you. They re-signed Ahmad Brooks. A bunch of other guys are coming back. Bottom line is that they're going to be very good on defensive game. There's no question about that. And Aldon Smith, who knows how good he's going to be in his second year. That guy's an absolute beast. So the Niners on defense are going to be great. They already have an offensive line full with first and second round picks. Their offensive line is a very good unit. They can run the football at Frank Gore. They already have a complimentary back in Kendall Hunter. Now Brandon Jacobs there too. So their running game, to me, is pretty much set. They've already brought in Mario Manningham, who is a solid number two wide receiver in the NFL. Randy Moss, roll the dice, flip the coin. Who knows what the heck's going to happen with him. You hope Michael Crabtree continues to improve. And then, of course, you have Vernon Davis. So you got to figure they're going to look to add another weapon, just like Len said, on offense, whether it's at wide receiver or, as he put it, Remember, they love to run the football. Running a too tight on offense can help you run the football. It really can sometimes, especially if you want to run it between the tackles and not necessarily spread people out and get your running room that way. So is it impossible for me to think the 49ers could take Colby Fleener? No. But I do think, and I think most people believe, they will go offense with that first pick in the draft. Clearly, that's where the 49ers need the most help. Now, I still think, and obviously they went after him, so they thought so too. Peyton Manning would have made that team probably the best team in football next year with that defense and that quarterback. And they tried, and they made the right move. And I know a lot of people said, oh, you're going to get Alex Smith angry at you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know what? Too bad. You had a chance to get Peyton Manning, and look what happens. They end up giving Alex Smith his money anyway. He gets his contract extension. And you think he's going to be thinking about or caring about the fact that they went after potentially the best quarterback in the history of the NFL for 2 weeks? No. He's going to be happy that he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. And his team had every right to be in the Super Bowl last year, if not for a couple of boneheaded special teams plays. Again, that's not taking away from the Giants, folks. But, you know, those were in some ways self-inflicted wounds by the 49ers in that game. And they should feel just as confident as any other team in the NFL heading into next season that they can make a run at the Super Bowl, especially in a division like the NFC West, which is not, at least at this point, you never know in the NFL, it changes year to year, does not look particularly strong. So that's where you are, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. The draft should be great. We're going to try to get somebody to talk about the draft every day next week, Monday through Thursday, right here on Giants.com. Michael Eisen will join us as well. Hopefully his voice will be back by then. No more Springsteen concerts for Eisen. He just gets too excited, pumped up. But I just in my head imagining him at the Springsteen concert, and it just makes me laugh. It really does. Everybody, thanks for joining us on Giants.com. We appreciate it. We come your way every morning from 10 to 10:30. Of course, the offseason report will come your way later on today on Giants.com. And wall-to-wall coverage of the NFL draft. I mentioned our top five prospects at each position. You can check that out. Draft Memories will come next week. Eisen's Mailbag is on the website right now. You can look at that as well. A lot of good stuff on Giants.com. Make sure you check it out every single day. For Daniel Mulligan from NFLDraftBible.com, we thank him for joining us. My name is John Schmelk. Everybody, enjoy your weekend. Survive the rain. We'll see you next week. The NFL Draft is finally around the corner. Have a good one.